Welcome to the More Perfect Union, the podcast that offers real debate without the hate. From the right, we have
DJ McGuire, a progressive conservative from Suffolk, Virginia, who forgot he needs to stay closer to his microphone.
And from the left, we have
Greg Matuszak, a common sense liberal who's warning everyone, midterms are coming. HBO, please don't sue me. From Cincinnati, Ohio.
I'm Rebecca Kushmider, a progressive feminist from Kensington, Maryland.
And I'm Kevin Kelton, a passionate moderate in Los Angeles who is warning everybody, the midterms are going to be a very long Tuesday. So start drinking early and calm the F down, because you're going to be unhappy at some point in the night. I don't care who you are. You're going to be very unhappy at some point in the night.
That's actually my motto. Drink early and drink often.
There you go.
Indeed. Follow DJ and just start drinking now.
Yes. And before we get into all of that, we want to remind everybody to check out our website, moreperfectunionpodcast.com, where we have commentary that we write during the week. Rebecca, you just posted another article. Could you tell us about that?
Sure. I talked about how not to be a complete douchebag when selecting a Halloween costume. It's really easy. No blackface and Nixon masks are funny. Anyone can do it.
It was a little late rules. This year, though.
Well, I mean, you know what? Yeah, it was a little late, but we can bookmark it for next year. I can recycle the content if I get lazy next October. I mean, it has to do with, you know, there was that group of teachers who dressed up as the border wall and then a group of really racist stereotypes of Mexicans. And I thought we might make it through this year where everyone was just basically, you know, dressed as Hermione or a character from The Incredibles, but no, someone had to ruin it.
That is a reminder to all Americans, there is no longer any such thing as my own private Idaho. Thank you.
God.
And I wrote an article this week for the More Perfect Union podcast website where I talked about, I made my final pitch to millennials as to why they should vote. And it wasn't about why they should vote for themselves, but why they should vote for their best friends. And I pointed out some of those best friends. So even if it doesn't seem like your vote matters a whole lot to you, it may matter very much to your gay friend, your trans friend, your minority friend, and many other people whose lives will be affected by the outcome of this congressional election. But beyond that, let's talk about it. Let's talk about the midterms. We're now a day away.
Before that, are you going to mention our accolades and kudoses that we got this week?
We were ranked the number 20 political podcast in America by a blogger whose name I'm forgetting, who makes a point of doing these things, of listening to political podcasts and caring about how good they are, and actually went to the effort of ranking them. And we came out number 20, beating out some pretty well-known podcasts.
It was a big list. I mean, you know, we were on there with like NPR political podcasts, and
didn't beat NPR podcasts.
We didn't beat them, but we are in the top 20 with them.
They are like one or two or three, but we are
they're one and two and three. Yeah, DJ.
they are that good. They are one, two, right, and three. But still, being on this list with some of the bigger, better podcasts, one, it gives us something to aspire to. Two, it makes us feel pretty good. And three, I want to take this opportunity to thank the listeners and people who listen to us to put us on this list. We'll put the link on our website.
Okay. Yeah, we'll do. So, yeah, let's talk about the midterms and give people that wonderful product that everybody is clamoring for. So, gosh, gang, everybody has views about what the outcome is going to be. We're all nervous because we deeply care that one side prevails and the other side does not. But let's start with what you think is going to happen. Keep it, you know, more of a personal. I don't care what the polls told you. We're all seeing the same polls. What do you think is going to happen and why?
Well, I think I'm going to be arrogant enough to assume that people actually are curious about how I make my set of predictions that outside of Virginia last year have been so thoroughly debunked and laughed at. essentially what I do is I'll acknowledge I do look at polling and such, but there are certain assumptions that I hold, and I tend to hold to them long after they essentially belong in the trash bin. One of them that I am holding to is the assertion that I do not think a single Democratic incumbent senator will lose the cycle, despite the fact that every poll out there says that Heidi Heitkamp is going down in North Dakota. I am not going to believe that she will actually lose until I actually see her lose. And the reason for that is because every poll said she was going down in 2012, and she still managed to win re-election. That very assumption is fueling the fact that I actually think the Democrats will win the Senate on Tuesday. Because I think Dean Heller will fall, and I think Kristen Sinema will win. That's a gain of two. I refuse to believe that Heidi Heitkamp will lose until she actually loses on Tuesday night. Now, I'm not saying bet that way. I'm saying that's my assumption. It's a midterm election with a Republican in the White House. Swing voters and late deciders will break against the incumbent party in the White House. That happened in 2014. That happened in 2010. And the Republicans got bigger gains, particularly in 2014. They got bigger gains than anticipated. I think that will happen for the Democrats. I'm going to be a bit more conservative on the House side, based on the way I think the swings are going in those tight districts, the 69 districts that the Washington Post are polling, 63 of them are held by Republicans. It looks like it'll be about a 10-point swing in that district. That means about 38 seats flipping. I think there'll be a couple more in seats we don't anticipate. So I'm going to say a 40-seat Democratic gain, which would put them at about 235 seats, a majority of 35. That's what I see happening on Tuesday. I refuse to believe a single Democratic incumbent senator is going to lose until it actually happens and I'm forced to confront it on Tuesday night or Wednesday morning.
Okay, and well, I'm ready to kill myself now.
The one thing I'm even more certain of, though, is that we will not know who is elected governor of Georgia on Tuesday night. I am damn certain that is headed for a runoff.
All right. Unlike DJ, I don't believe in numbers and facts.
History,
book learning. So I actually look at a couple other factors when I do my predictions, mostly chicken bones and tea leaves. But the other things that I look at is geography. And I think geography will play a huge part in this. I think things on the coast, the two coasts will lean heavily blue. And I know that's not going to surprise anybody, but in this race it will, because we have a lot of races really close right in the Midwest and in the center. So Kristen Sinema, I'm sorry, although you're not in the Midwest, you're not on the coast either. And I hate to say this, I'm going to say this several times to Rebecca to get her ready for it, she's not going to win.
You're wrong.
I know.
I'm just telling you, you're wrong.
I know.
Even if she doesn't win her election, she has won my heart.
I know. She's won the heart of millions. And
husband, and my gay friend Jenny, we all have crushes on her, and I feel like she'd date any one of us.
I know. I think that's great. And you know what? She's an icon.
Putting all that aside, the Democratic reelection in the Southwest, it was partial, but it was real in 2016. I genuinely believe it has continued into 2018. I think that's real. I honestly believe she wins. Okay. So, yes, she will be in Washington. And, Rebecca, you can hit on her if you wish to.
But going on, I think since we have a lot of House seats in California, the California 25, the mighty 25, I think that's going to go blue. We have many House seats that are important in California. I think there's 7 that are really important. They will all go blue. Now, here's the other good news. I think Florida, that will go blue. I think Rick Scott will lose. Thank you. I think in Georgia, I think Stacey Abrams will win. I think the minority vote will come out heavily. And I think it will surprise people. I think it will be like 53%. I think it will be like, wow. Especially when you have, and we'll talk about this later, Oprah coming out.
You get a governorship.
And we'll talk about that power later. But people like Phil Bredesen for Senate, I mean, he screwed the pooch when he endorsed Kavanaugh. So we'll lose the Senate. The Democrats will win the House we'll probably pick up. I'm going to be that guy on The Price is Right who says just under, let's say let's say 38. It's going to be closer than anyone thinks.
Rebecca?
I stopped paying any attention to the Senate because it's too stressful. I'm with DJ on Kyrsten Sinema. The polls have had her dead even with Martha McSally as recently as Wednesday, I think. And I think it's all about turnout operation there. And I think she's got a good ground game. I also think she's a very good candidate. I haven't spent a lot of time listening to McSally yet, but Sinema, if you're in a room with her, you're going to buy what she's selling. She's just really got a lot going for her. You know, as for other Senate races, the map is against us. This is the most uphill Senate race for Democrats in decades, just because of who's running and where. And so I'm not hopeful that we can take it back, but I don't know that the balance of it will change much. I'm more optimistic about the House, largely because my husband is more optimistic about the House, and he's often right about things like this. And he knows House campaigns pretty well, having been a House staffer for a very long time.
Well, where we do agree is that I think the Democrats are going to have a good night in terms of governorships. I specifically think that if I had to bet on any one race this year, I would bet on Andrew Gillum to win. That's the race I feel most comfortable about. However, I don't know how this is going to happen, but I have a feeling that Rick Scott is going to beat Bill Nelson in the same race, in the same state. So I'm not feeling very confident about the Senate. I'm not sure how I feel about that Arizona race. I'm sorry. I think it can still go either way. I think Dean Heller is going to prevail in Nevada. I think that there are incumbent senators who are in a lot more jeopardy than DJ seems to think. I don't see Heidkamp winning at all. I think Robert Menendez is in for a tough battle. But I will say this. I had a surge of potential optimism about Beto O'Rourke, and here's why. He's down in the polls. He's down outside of the margin of error in almost every poll, although I do understand that some of them have tightened in the last couple of days. But I have this feeling of, like, it's one thing if a pollster calls you up and asks you who you'd plan to vote for between Ted Cruz and Beto O'Rourke. I can see a lot of people, a lot of conservative Republicans in Texas saying, oh, Ted Cruz. But are those people really going to get into their trucks, take a half hour out of their Tuesday to go pull a lever or push a button for Ted Cruz? I don't think he's got that kind of sway on voters anymore. And so I could see that one being a surprise upset. And that would obviously make everybody very joyful. In terms of the House, I am nowhere near as confident as you guys are. I do have some hopes that the Democrats will prevail, and I think it will be about 4 or 5 seats. So I see them having a 27-28 seat margin of victory. But I could also see them falling short. I mean, here's where I am with the polls. I don't knock pollsters. I don't think pollsters blew it in 2016. I think the models are just models. And, you know, as everybody says with data, the data you get out is only as good as the data you put in. And we don't know what millennials are going to do right now. I've seen numbers that suggest that they're through the roof in enthusiasm. I see all of this Target Smart numbering saying that they've turned out, you know, they're 400% up in this state and they're 180% up in this state in early voting. First of all, I think early voting just cannibalizes votes that you'd get on election day. So I don't put a lot of stock in early voting anymore. And secondly,
I'm closer to you on that.
Yeah, and you agree. And secondly, yeah. I'm
early
just,
voting proves that we need early voting. That I mean, that it proves that when you extend the voting period, it makes it more convenient for people to vote.
Yeah, that doesn't mean anything else.
I am more swayed by the anecdotal evidence that I'm seeing over the numbers. Which, by the way, I think another problem is that the cable news networks, they tend to magnify and echo little blips in the numbers to make us think that the Democrats have are standing stronger than they are. Most of these races, like the one that I'm in, CA25, they're within the margin of error. And so those polls mean zip. If you've got a candidate who's up 1.5 to 2.5 points in polling, that's nothing. That's a tied race.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
And so we all could be very surprised on Tuesday if there's just a little lapse in Democratic turnout and a little jump in Republican enthusiasm and turnout. So it can go either way. And frankly, I know that there's going to be points during the day where I'm going to be pulling out some hair. I'm just going to try to focus on the parts that are already balding so that it isn't too much of a change.
Kevin, you are absolutely right. Races that are within the margin of error are essentially statistical ties. I have no argument with you there. The thing I would note, though, is that usually in midterm elections, it is the party outside of the White House that gets the late breakers at the end.
Yes, usually.
In 2010 and 2014, those were Republicans. Now, in 2002 and 1998, in that case, Presidents Bush and Clinton respectively had such high approval ratings that they got the late breakers. Donald Trump is in no position to win those late breakers over. The other thing I would mention, and this is just something to think about in case the Republicans do actually manage to hold on to both houses of Congress, which is possible. I'm not saying it's impossible. There is, a one in six chance. And hey, sometimes you roll the dice and it comes out snake eyes. The situation that Donald Trump is in, where he is he's not a third term president like George W. Bush was. Jimmy Carter did not lose either house of Congress in 1978. He got blown out of the box in 1980. So the fact of the matter is, even if the Republicans do manage to win both houses of Congress in 2018, and even if they give Donald Trump free rein to do a whole source of damage, and he will do a whole lot of damage, that doesn't automatically mean that Donald Trump is a lock for 2020. He's a favorite for 2020 because he's the incumbent. He always is. But even if the Republicans manage to pull a rabbit out of the hat, even if they manage to hold the majorities in both houses, that doesn't mean that Donald Trump is guaranteed re-election. There's still a fight to be held in 2020.
Oh, yeah.
Donald Trump will never be guaranteed re-election because he'll never get his positives over 50%.
In fact, this whole thing could really bite us in the ass because let's say our dream scenario happens. The Dems win both houses. Let's say the Dems win one house. We all know where the economy is headed in 6 months, okay?
Not because of the Dems. You're saying it's going to happen either way, right?
It's going to happen regardless.
Right.
Okay, we've had giant tax cuts. We've had these giant tariffs.
Huge deficit.
So with this in mind, what's going to happen is we get one House of Congress, and come 2020, we're going to say, hey, you elected some Democrats. They threw the whole thing in kink. Do you want to elect any more Democrats? And that's what's going to happen. If none of us get elected, if we don't win any houses and this thing goes to pot, which I never want anything bad to happen, trust me. But if it does, we have a better chance of winning the whole thing in 2020.
The joke is recoveries don't die of old age. The Fed takes them out and shoots them. And the fact of the matter
I never heard that before.
A terrible joke.
Yes, and yet you are all laughing.
Yes, because we think it's probably true.
Of course. Yeah. Of course.
This is a Fed that is determined to corral inflation. I think rightly so. The fact of the matter is this is a recovery that has gone on for 9-10 years. And yeah, I think we all agree that the recovery will likely end sometime in 2019. And the question is not going to be then who to blame for it, although Donald Trump would like to say, oh, it's the Democrat House's fault, assuming the Democrats win the House. I think they will.
But he wants to blame the Democrats if he gets a hangnail, so let's ignore him.
Well, yes, that is true. Well, no, actually, what he wants to do is he wants to blame the caravan for the recession. He's going
to
say that.
Yeah, no, he wants to blame the caravan. He also wants to blame Hillary Clinton for the recession.
Right. Yeah. But it's always brown people and Hillary Clinton who caused everything wrong with this country. So he'll blame them for the recession. And, the Democrats will nominate whoever they nominate in 2020. But the fact of the matter is, what is more important, however, I think it was Will Ferrell said, let's bring back the balance. Was it Will Ferrell? I'm too drunk to remember. It was Jim Carrey. My apologies to both men. But the fact of the matter is, that's really what we need to focus on. And even someone who is in the center right, as I still think I am, again, and this is something, Max Boot talks about. He had a wonderful column on the Washington Post talking about basically just vote against every Republican, vote against every single one, because the entire party has completely failed in its role of holding its own president in check. I remember when Republicans held George W. Bush in check. I remember when Republicans held George H.W. Bush in check. I dimly remember when Republicans held Ronald Reagan in check. They're not holding Donald Trump in check anymore. They don't deserve to be in power. Therefore, they should be removed from power. It really is that simple on Tuesday, I'm sorry to say.
Okay, so let's talk about the caravan now that we've touched on it. So we have, this giant marauding gang, angry mob of you know, thousands and thousands of people. And they, you know, the little children are actually surrounding the MS-13 gang members in the middle of it.
Right, yes. Know. Yeah, they're a shield.
And let's not forget the Arabian terrorists that are also in there. Yeah.
And all the pedophiles that Jeanine Pirro has found.
Right.
Strangely enough, none of them look like Roy Moore. I can't explain it.
It's weird. Right.
And yet we have a president who has declared war on a border. Not on people. He's declared war on the border, and he has sent the U.S. Army there to defend it.
The president actually praised barbed wire in his rally. He says barbed wire is a wonderful thing. Can we please stop?
Let me ask this. Let me, you know, I often play devil's advocate on this show.
I'm too drunk too, but go on.
I'm going to take the Trumpian point of view for a moment. Let's say, yes, the caravan seems to be dispersing. It's probably a good 2 months away from our border. But if they continue to walk, at some point they will reach the most southern tip of the United States. What happens if there's 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 people that get to the border and they, as a strategy to get into the United States, disperse into small groups of 7, 10, 15? And then just do a blitz. They go in different directions, hitting every part of the border. How does the United States stop those people from illegally coming over? So don't give me the asylum answer. Tell me how we stop people who want to enter the country illegally from breaking into small groups and coming at the border in different directions and trying to flood the border patrol. And my follow-up question is, and if we can't stop them from coming in, what's to stop another caravan from starting in 3 months and one 3 months after that and one 3 months after that?
Okay. So the term, you know, if you're a young person like myself, this is called bum rushing. Like, have you ever heard the term? It is. The term is called bum rushing. If you've ever heard the term bum rush a show, where young people used to go to like a concert event, right? And they would see, like, they'd see one person at the door, and they'd all run towards the door, and they would say, like, get 20 people, and they would run towards the bouncer, and they'd say, you can't stop all of us, so at least, like, 18 of us are going to get through. It's called a bum rush. And that's what this is. They're afraid of a bum rush, right? The thing is, with children, you can't bum rush a country. Okay, it is a desolate, I mean, it's huge desert, and these people have been walking for thousands of miles, literally, and there are people walking along saying, look, if you would like to, and it's through education, and they have been telling everybody, look, when you get to this place, and I know you hate the asylum word, which is totally legal, and you don't do it at embassies.
I got to tell you something. From the perspective of a conservative who's worried about illegal immigration, and yes, we can joke, you know, are there any, you know, rational people?
No.
Okay, so but from the perspective of that person or those people, your argument that, oh, they're going to go through the asylum process, it rings hollow because many of them won't.
How if they are given a choice after walking literally thousands of miles, okay, with almost nothing, like a bag, a paper bag, most of them, or a plastic bag, and they have been told, you have a choice. Good luck, okay, trying to get through this area, and everyone on the other side, they catch you, just might shoot you. Not only with, there are border patrols, vigilante groups, who knows? Good luck. And while you're over there, good luck. Or you can see that gate over there, you say the words, asylum. Here's
the answer, Greg, because they haven't been doing it that way for the last 20 years. Are you denying that people try to sneak across the border? Hold on, let me make a fair argument. So you can actually shoot it down. But I want to make this argument clearly. Greg, they do it now. They do it now with children. I'll make the counter argument. You go through the asylum process. They may take your kids away now, and you may never see them again. They may send you to tent cities, and then they're going to send you back to Guatemala. Your better chance is to try to sneak across the border. I'm a coyote. Get into my truck for $15 a head. I'll get you across the border.
Okay,
you tell me why that argument is wrong.
The first problem is that there is a mistaken assumption about why this caravan is a caravan. It's not about bum rushing the border. It's actually about avoiding those coyotes that you talk about, because they don't charge $15 a head. They charge thousands of dollars a head that these people can't afford. So they come up and they come up as a group of hundreds or thousands so that they can avoid the people smugglers and they can avoid the bandits who would seize upon them if there are just two or three of them. It's not about what might happen when they get to the border. It's about making sure they get to the border itself without being violently attacked or without having to pay thousands of dollars to people smugglers. That's the first mistake a lot of people make. These people are more than willing to go through the asylum process. Their main concern is making sure they get to the border without being physically harmed or without being forced to pay thousands of dollars that they don't know that they don't have and they can't afford. The second issue is we make this assumption, we all make this assumption, that somehow more people in the United States is bad. It's an idiotic Malthusian assumption. People are a resource. More people in the country is good. The fact of the matter is these are people who are escaping horrible conditions, and they genuinely believe that if they get to tell their side of the story, that judges or the American people as large will let them in and welcome them with open arms. And I think the American people would if they actually recognized, one, how terrible the situation really is in Central America. So the fact of the matter is these people have very good reasons for wanting to get the hell out of there. And they recognize that Mexico is not a country that would really help them. Mexico has, in fact, proven that over and over again under Peña Nieto. And they're hoping that the United States, the country that actually helped so many Central American countries get rid of communist militias and communist rebellion groups in the 1980s, they're hoping that the United States will still be there for them. And what hurts me more than anything else is that under Donald Trump, so many Republican voters are simply forgetting their own history and saying, you know what, they're just brown people, we don't want them in the country anymore. And frankly, that is really driving a lot of this in terms of Donald Trump supporters, because Republicans of the 1980s would have said, of course we'll let them into the country. They're dealing with communist insurgencies. They're dealing with communist governments. Welcome to the United States. And oh, by the way, what do you know about your particular home country and how can we help the people that you left behind free themselves of the shackles of communist insurgencies and communist dictatorships so that they can have a better life for themselves? There was a time when Republicans understood that. They frankly don't now. They just see brown people and see them as a threat. It is painful, it is embarrassing, and it is one of the reasons why I call myself a conservative Democrat.
Well, you know, you have to believe in miracles, because 2-3 years ago when we started this show, and by the way, we're celebrating our 180th episode this week, so let's take a moment to, again, pat ourselves on the back. But who would have thought 180 episodes ago that DJ would be the more liberal person on this issue than I am? And you know what? That's a good thing. That's a good thing.
The More Perfect Union. Real debate without the hate. Brought to you by the good people at Pillsbury.
No, we're not.
Those bastards.
Okay, so now let's talk a little bit about what's to come. Now, we don't know the outcome of the election. It hasn't happened yet. But we know that it is a fork in the road that represents two very different paths for the next 2 or 6 years in the United States. Let's talk about the immediate future, especially, you know, I think the big issue that everybody wants to talk about, the marquee issue, is what happens with the Mueller investigation. So, guys, where do you see things going if the Democrats take the House, and where do you see things going if the Republicans hold the House?
Well, I think if Democrats take the House, they're going to spur lots of little spawn investigations into things that are not technically under Mueller's jurisdiction. So that Mueller will be left alone to do whatever it is he's doing up there. He's awful quiet.
So you think that there's going to be an outbreak, not an outbreak, you think there's going to be a move towards committees that are now going to be run by Democrats starting to investigate the president?
Oh,
I want to
absolutely.
I want to give Greg a chance to answer this. Greg, what do you think?
Well, you know, it's not only that, but there was an article in Politico this week that was kind of interesting, that Mueller is already laying some things down, that he might have already subpoenaed Trump for the grand jury. And I know this is conspiratorial because all of this is under closed doors, and I love it.
It's all speculation. Okay.
It's all speculation. I have my own private theory. I haven't talked to you guys about this. About when you do a grand jury, you don't want the person you're going after on the grand jury, because they're just going to sit there and say, I plead the fifth, I plead the fifth, I plead the fifth. But I have a theory of my own why they want Trump there. And I think they're not going to go after him. I think they're going to go after his family. They're going to go after his organization. And the last question, and they're all going to frame it as, President Trump, you're really quite too stupid to understand any of this, aren't you? Humiliate him. And then at the last bit, he's going to say, me? I know all of this. It was me. I did it. I'm the mastermind. And he's going to stand up and he's going to indict himself. And he's going to say, I was the one who made the calls. I'm the ringleader. Here's my P tape to prove it. I'm the guy.
So you're picking sort of a Scooby-Doo ending.
I know. And Mueller's just going to say, see. And then he's just going to walk out and it's going to say, Dick Wolf. And then
to all of our listeners, this is why we should all be grateful that Robert Mueller is running this investigation and not Greg Matuszak.
Because are you
Greg
kidding?
No, I think Greg Matuszak beyond all recognition.
Are you kidding? Yeah. That would be the best.
Sorry. That is a scene worthy of the final court scene in A Few Good Men.
Except that Daniel Caffey is despite being fictional, is still a far better lawyer than Greg ever was.
Oh, I don't know.
Can I just interject and say, I actually now feel tremendous guilt that I cut off Rebecca to allow you to say what you just said.
This is me slow clapping the mic in Kevin's behalf.
All right. I am writing this down as my courtroom play. I am going to call it.
You should call Aaron Sorkin and get to work co-writing that with him, because it is the best stuff I've ever heard.
I don't know if I have a day off, but when I do, I'm going to write it. And if we post it on the our website, and it's going to be called The Trial of Donald Trump, and you guys will love it. So, yeah.
I mean, I don't think you're far off with, you know, with lines of questioning regarding the Trump family and different people way up high in the Trump organization. I don't think it's going to go down in quite as a made-for-TV moment as that. And I also think some of it's going to be happening in the Southern District of New York. You know, some of that's going to happen regardless of whether the Democrats take the House or not.
It's going to be awesome. At one point, they're going to say, Donald Trump, what's the square root of 16? I plead the fifth. You can't plead the fifth on a math problem, sir. You really are stupid, aren't you?
DJ, I'm curious about your take. Where do you see things going, especially vis-a-vis the Mueller investigation in each scenario?
Well, I actually think that the Democrats could actually get in the way of the Mueller investigation, although a Democratic House will ensure that Mueller's investigation will continue because Trump will not feel that he has the political capital to fire him. But the Democrats need to be very careful in 2019 and beyond, because they need to make sure that their investigation does not actually get in the way of what Mueller is doing, and particularly in regards to the Russia piece of this, and to the question of Trump campaign cooperation with Russia. The Democrats need to make sure that they don't accidentally start bringing in witnesses and granting them immunity in ways that make it harder for Mueller to ensure their cooperation as witnesses. So I think Democrats need to be actually very careful about how they handle the areas that Mueller is investigating regarding their oversight. Regarding areas outside of Mueller's investigation, I would say stick the probe as far up the Trump administration's ass as you possibly can, because no one else is looking at that shit right now.
Oh, God, DJ. I'm going to have nightmares.
I don't need that. I need eye bleach.
Why did you do that to us?
Wait, you need eye bleach for something I said. Really?
Vivid imagination.
This is why fine arts majors shouldn't be allowed to discuss politics.
Well, my concern, listen, if the Republicans take the House or hold the House, there's no doubt in my mind that he is going to, one way or the other, shut down the Mueller investigation. That doesn't mean that he out and out fires Robert Mueller. He's clearly going to be replacing Jeff Sessions, and whoever takes over there, if he can get somebody appointed. Now, remember, if the Republicans take 3 or 4 more seats in the Senate and get 54 or 55 votes, that gets them that much closer to being able to confirm the next attorney general quickly in the new session. And I don't know whether that's going to be Lindsey Graham or somebody else.
It's going to be Lindsey Graham.
I am willing to go far enough. I am willing to go this far. The absolute ceiling on Republican gains is one seat.
Okay, but let's not get back into that. That's okay, so that's your prediction, and that's fine. But my point is that if the Democrats take control of the House, take control of the committees, get subpoena power, Trump, who is already in a panic over what that means for his presidency, is going to flip out in the next 3 months, in my opinion, in my projection. He's going to do everything he can to thwart the Mueller investigation. There may be a scenario where Mueller tries to subpoena him and that goes through the courts quickly. I don't know how that would play out. Eventually, Mueller is going to issue a report. I believe before that happens, he will probably indict some Americans, including, I believe, Roger Stone, maybe a couple of Woo-hoo! Other people whose names are under the radar right now. And there will be a compelling case to be made that there was illegal collusion and conspiracy with some Russians to affect the outcome of the election vis-a-vis stealing and publicly dispersing stolen emails. So what happens next? I believe we are going to see that quote-unquote, that air quotes, constitutional crisis that everybody has been speculating about since early 2017. Mueller is going to issue a report. It goes to Rod Rosenstein or whoever is sitting in the deputy DOJ's chair when it's released, unless somehow he gets a temporary attorney general in place, in which case it goes directly to that person. I have a feeling this thing is either going to be quashed or so heavily redacted that you won't be able to make sentences out of it. And the Adam Schiffs and the Maxine Waters, and, you know, you can go to the Senate, whoever you want to pick, who's an outspoken liberal Democrat, they're going to be going crazy. They're going to be threatening lawsuits, instituting lawsuits. I don't know where it goes from there. I'm just telling you that the reality of the last 2 years is going to be extremely different than the reality of the coming 2 years. In either case, in either scenario, it's going to be about investigations. It's going to be about legal challenges. It's going to be about the president saying, I have the power to do this, and I don't care what anybody says. I'm doing it. And then you have to go and stop him. And I don't know where that leads us. It could be a very peaceful process. It could be a very unpleasant process. Does anyone disagree with that analysis?
Not at all.
I mean, I am deeply curious about what Mueller's going to report and when and how much of it we're going to see.
And by the way, you know, will they try to, you know, delegitimize him again as they tried to last week with that phony baloney sexual harassment?
Oh, God,
scam.
That was the best thing that ever happened. That, like, all of that, that was high comedy. You know, they were like, the what was his name? Jack Burkhead, Buckhead, Beekman.
Jack Berkman and Jacob Wall.
Right. And then comes out with this tweet like, I am very sorry to say that I'm going to have to hold a press conference about allegations about Robert Mueller. Meanwhile, like, he'd been trying to pay women to say things about Robert Mueller. And one of the women he'd contacted, the first person she called after she got off the phone was Robert Mueller, who's like, OK, I'm going to transfer you to the FBI now and then get back to work. You know, so it was just a comedy of errors. And, you know, there's this whole press conference where it's basically like, yeah, he harassed a girl. She lives in Canada. You wouldn't know her.
But let me interrupt. It's not funny because for the past month, the right and every conservative and I'm going to borrow a phrase that I think you've got copyrighted, Rebecca, so please don't charge me. White men with penises. So I'll give you a nickel.
Yeah, thank you.
Has been saying every white man with penises has been saying, like, it could happen to anybody. Anybody could be framed for sexual harassment, but it can't. This proves it. You can't. There are ways. There are investigations. This proves it. You can't just frame someone for sexual harassment.
And it goes to it. It explains why so many people are willing to believe that everything is a conspiracy, where people are making up things to try and do political harm to an individual.
This is why we should have kind of believed. And when I say kind of, very believe Dr. Ford, Dr. Blasey Ford.
Well, and, you know, and the other thing is, when it's some guy coming out and saying, yes, I know of women who did a thing, it's different than a woman herself coming out and saying a thing happened.
Right.
And Jacob, what's his name himself? He's such a jackass that he stood up there. He's like, oh, you know, my instinct normally is not to believe women when they say bad things happen to them. So don't date him, girls. Guys, don't date Jacob. He's bad news.
Jacob Wall is a guy that is actually banned from doing any securities tradings on Wall Street already, and he's only 20 years old.
Well, yeah,
effort.
Somebody in the press conference said, yeah, dude, Jack What's-His-Face was trying to say, oh, yeah, he's a genius. And one of the reporters is like, he can't even have an E-Trade account. I don't think that's the way to describe him.
Actually, the best question, though, from the press was the last question. I don't know who it was, but somebody asked, are you ready for federal prison?
Well, and then they were also mad. They're like, you keep calling Jacob's mom. And it's like, because you gave out her phone number.
Oh, yeah. And the website that they put together to prove that this actually happened, they filled with stock photos of celebrities.
Right.
Yeah, like Italian porn stars.
Or Christopher Waltz.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
What did he do to deserve this?
Win an Oscar.
Quentin Tarantino calls you and says, hey, do you want to take a role in a movie I'm working on? And you say yes. And the next thing you know, you're part of some bizarre plot to bring down Robert Mueller. That's what happened to Christopher Waltz.
Is it Christopher or Christoph Waltz?
Oh, no, actually, it is Christoph. Kevin Christoph. Is correct. Good for you, Kevin.
Always trust Kevin on the celebrities.
True enough. True that.
He probably had lunch with him.
Mr. Wall created a company called Surefire Intelligence, which was supposedly involved in investigating this nonsense. And for all of the high-ranking folks who are involved in Surefire, like the director of investigations or the director of data or all the other people who don't really exist, he used stock photos of various people, and one of them was the stock photo of Christoph Waltz. Christoph Waltz's likeness was supposedly involved in Surefire Intelligence, which, reminder, does not actually exist. So that's how he got roped into all this nonsense.
And I'm guessing it wasn't a stock photo, and they probably don't have permission to use it. It was probably a still taken from like IMDb or something.
I can't rule that out either.
Yeah, well, you know, if they're willing to pay women to make up stories about the special prosecutor having sexually harassed them, they're not worried about Getty Images coming after them.
Well, and let's say they offered to pay women. I don't know if anybody's seen any actual money yet, My feeling is the money is not there.
So let's talk about, this is a good segue to celebrities who've had a real and positive effect, or are trying to have a positive effect on the midterms this year. There's a bunch of them. Greg, what do you think? Is this like, are there more celebrities this year? Is it about average? And should they be listened to?
Oh, you know, it's funny because I think it's about average. Some celebrities just give money, and I think that's wonderful. Seth MacFarlane actually leads. He gave $2.5 million to a group to help elect Democratic senators. Kristen Bell gave a whole bunch of money to Hill in California 25. She leads over there. And Cher gave a bunch of money to Native American candidates. However, there's others that actually go and knock on doors. Will Ferrell and Oprah.
Who's that? Oprah? I can't place the name. I'm sorry.
She's kind of obscure.
Okay.
You had lunch with her once, Kevin.
I'm sure you had lunch with her.
I wish.
She gave you a car.
Yeah, she was like, look under your chair. There's a car. They were in Georgia helping candidate Stacey Abrams, literally knocking on doors. And there's other ones who actually just do endorsements, like Taylor Swift. And this is my favorite, Captain Sully Sullenberg. And you guys remember him for the heroic landing of a plane in the Hudson. Sully Sullenberg is exactly. He's a lifelong Republican, but he wrote an op-ed in The Washington Post. All these people do different things. Chance the Rapper, Tiffany Haddish. John Legend is actually in Cincinnati right now doing something at the Hamilton County Board of Elections. I should be there right now.
I was going to say, you should call him and have
I
him.
Should.
You can be like Kevin.
I could be like Kevin. I'd say, I know Kevin Kelton. Before anyone's all these people do all sorts of things. These are all, by the way, celebrities for Democrats. And I know Rebecca had given me a list of Jodie Foster did a film for Get Out the Vote with women.
It was at least a dozen women, and like Felicity Huffman's in there, Lily Tomlin's in there, some actresses who are really young and pretty are in there,
and talented,
and also talented. And Jodie Foster herself is in it, and it's just to get out the vote.
And Brad Pitt and Leo DiCaprio. The only thing that I'll say is not a lot. And in fact, when I say not a lot, I can't find one celebrity who is out.
Well, I can think of one
for the GOP. Who's that?
Mike Pence was out there in Georgia, and you know he's kind of a big deal.
He is kind of a big deal.
He's
a big deal. He tells
in his own
he's
mind.
Yeah. Well, and using that line to be like, hey, Will Ferrell was here, but you know what? I'm kind of a big deal. It's like, bro, do you know you're quoting Will Ferrell?
Oh, he knew it. Somebody fed him
that
line.
Did he know it?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
And they thought
it
was very funny.
I'm not sure.
He blew it because he should have mentioned Ferrell last and then said, but you know, I'm here and I'm kind of a big deal too. Okay, but he blew it by mentioning Ferrell first. And I'll tell you why he blew it. Because I didn't even know that he was making that joke until the news people told me. So
you get all jokes. Tommy Lauren. Do you guys remember Tommy Lauren?
Oh, yeah.
No, I don't.
Yeah.
Tibby.
Blondie.
Tammy.
No, it's Tommy. Tommy Lauren.
On Twitter, we all just mess with her name.
Tommy Lauren.
She just tweeted yesterday. Let's be clear. I'm not with Taylor, and I'm not with Kanye. I'm not for celebrities that pop off their shit they don't understand, period. And I think this kind of opens up the discussions.
What is she if she's not a celebrity?
She sees herself as a real news journalist.
Yeah, right.
This is the entire modus operandi of a segment of the right wing that is particularly disreputable, pardon me for the wrong use of words. They seem to think that so long as they have celebrities to beat up, they can play the old own the libs card and everything's fine. They seem to think that, well, so long as we make various Hollywood folks our foil, that flyover country will rail to us because we all know those celebrity people aren't real America. It's another divisive and negative campaign tactic to avoid anything regarding a real substantive issue. And it is just a standard campaign trick, and I really hope the voters don't fall for it on Tuesday.
Well, and it's also ugly and insulting. Why shouldn't celebrities have a say in politics? Why shouldn't any of us have a say in politics? This is part of what America's founded on.
Let me say something. A celebrity does have the say in politics. It's the president of the United States. He was a celebrity before he started spouting off his mouth about politics. So to say that Brad Pitt or Janine Garofalo or someone on the right, let's say James Woods, should not have a say in politics. I disagree with virtually everything James Woods thinks about politics, but I think he's just as smart as Tommy What's-Her-Name or Bill O'Reilly or any of these so-called experts who know nothing. Bill O'Reilly was on, Access Hollywood before he got hired on Fox? He had no background in politics. So please, every person has a right to voice their opinion. We can dispute them. We can disagree with them. Then we can think they're idiots. But I don't care.
Or we can change the channel and move on with our day.
Right. But this idea that celebrities should shut up, That is the most elitist point of view I've ever heard. That celebrities should shut up, but some farmer sitting at a luncheonette in Iowa, that MSNBC or CNN should go and ask their opinion on politics, but forget about James Woods.
And sports figures, too.
Right. Right. Yeah. However, I think we all agree that Kanye West should not be listened to. So, with that in mind, we want to thank you for listening to us for the last hour. Please follow us on Twitter at hashtag MPU Podcast and on Facebook at facebook.com/MorePerfectUnionPodcast and share our link on your Facebook timeline so your friends can discover us as well. And if you like to discuss politics and would like to join us in debate between shows, we're all in a political debate group on Facebook called Open Fire Politics. So we'd love to see you there too. Just hit the join button. And with that, final question. What will you be ingesting on Tuesday night, DJ?
Probably Cherry Coke.
Rebecca?
Pizza and beer. I'm going to a watch party at a friend's house.
Cool.
My wife got the makings for debate nachos that we are turning into election nachos.
All right.
Which I think is debate nachos with black olives and maybe mushrooms. I haven't decided about the mushrooms because,
good choice.
I'm in it to win it. More sour cream.